This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. As President-elect Donald Trump prepares to enter the White House, the public and the press are still recovering from a race that was characterized by a frustrated electorate, breaks from traditional politics, and scandal. Now the media is gearing up to cover a new president, a president who had some of his most quotable moments on Twitter and who has also been open about his criticisms of the press.
And even though the election has wrapped up, post-mortem conversations among journalists, analysts, communities, and families are likely to continue. Tomorrow there will be a panel discussion at Madison's Overture Center on ethics and the 2016 election, sponsored by the UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics.
Molly Ball will be one of the panelists at tomorrow's event, and she joins us in studio now. She's a national political reporter for The Atlantic. She's currently the December writer-in-residence at UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics. Molly, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you wrote a piece in The Atlantic back in June. It was called Stop Blaming the Media for Trump. And in that piece, you talked about media being blamed for his rise in the primaries because of the amount of attention that he got from journalists. Do you still stand by that argument? Do you feel like Trump's critics blame the media too much for his rise?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as a political reporter, I've been hearing a lot of anger at the media from both sides. The Clinton campaign believes that she lost in part because the media was unfair to her. The Trump campaign, as you noted, has and Trump himself have been very antagonistic toward a media that they believe is dishonest and not fair to President-elect Trump. I believe that we are doing our jobs to find the truth and represent the facts without fear or favor. But there is a lot of anger directed at the media right now, and a lot of that is exacerbated by the candidates. As I mentioned, both candidates dislike the media. One was much more forward about it than the other, and to have a major party nominee and now president-elect like Donald Trump, who called out individual reporters and who attacked the media often without cause, and who really, I think, saw it as a campaign tactic to turn his followers against the media so that they would believe him in the face of the facts in many instances. That has contributed to an even more toxic atmosphere than I'm used to, because it's certainly nothing new for political reporters to be disliked.
And what do you think about how that played into what happened during the election? The media did get dinged in this election. I mean, we've seen trust eroding in other institutions like Congress, for example. If you look further afield, religion. Now the media, it does seem like, took a hit during this election. I mean, what do you make of that and that general sentiment combined with how this election went over with voters?
Well, I think you make a very smart point, which is that the decline in trust in the media is of a piece with decline in trust in all sorts of institutions in our society. But it's certainly true that when you look at polls, people used to trust the media a lot more than they do now. I think part of that is certainly the internet and social media and the proliferation of new sources of information that allow people to find the news that flatters their assumptions and reject contrary facts. I am lucky to work at an institution that seeks to confront people with the truth, whether they like it or not. And I hope that there's still a market for that. I believe there's still a market for that. While I certainly have experienced people's lack of trust in the media for a long time as a political reporter, it clearly is increasing.
Well, the New York Times, among other media outlets, their subscriptions went up some 40,000, and that's not the only news outlet that saw that sort of spike after the election. So does that tell a different narrative, that maybe there is this market, as you're saying, for people who are really looking for substantive, fact-based journalism?
Well, we've seen our subscriptions increase at The Atlantic as well. And what I've seen from the beginning of covering this election, I mean, this election is probably the biggest political story I've ever covered. And it is fascinating and perplexing to many people. So there is a lot of interest in reporting that is nuanced and that contextualizes a new and shocking and unprecedented phenomenon and helps people to understand it. So, you know, we've seen record web traffic at theatlantic.com. We've seen new subscriptions to The Atlantic magazine, which, of course, everyone should give their families as a Christmas gift this season. but I think that reflects people's hunger for answers in a time when there are a lot of questions. And they are gratifyingly, not just to our bottom line, but to my sense of civic responsibility, they are turning to institutions like the Atlantic that do seek out the truth to try and find those answers.
You had a conversation with Vox's Ezra Klein back in September, and I want to play a little bit of that now.
I feel like that's been one of my potentially learning experiences of this election, that maybe elections were never really about ideas. Maybe they were always about these issues of identity and tribe and people's sense of where the interests of their group lie and who they identify with.
So you're saying there that maybe elections are not about ideas, and you think about election platforms, they should be, I guess, built on the ideas of the candidates, but you're saying that was a big lesson for you. Do you still think that, that you had maybe a different focus you could have pulled to, and that was what people, how people relate to the politics and what they're living?
Absolutely. Thank you for quoting me to myself. I did. This election really did change the way I think about and understand politics. I think it would be very disingenuous to claim that this election was a referendum on, you know, Donald Trump's tax plan on his website versus the tax plan that Hillary Clinton put on her website. It was very clear to me covering this election, and the way I cover the story is to try to cover what's actually happening out there in American politics. It was very clear to me that that was not the basis on which voters were making their decision. Now, I have friends in political science who tell me I was naive to think that politics was ever a contest of ideas, that it really always has been a contest more of identities and people's tribalism deep down. But that is really the view that I developed in covering this campaign. And, you know, I realized very early on covering Donald Trump that something was happening out there that I didn't understand. And my reaction to that as a reporter is always to investigate, to go out and try to get my head around what's happening. Talking to people, talking to sources, going different places, bearing witness to events, and trying to explain to readers this new phenomenon that I really think did in many ways change the face of American politics. But to have the curiosity as a reporter to say, and the humility to say, that this is not something that I understand and can explain to you. I have to go out and figure it out through reporting.
We heard the phrase media elites a lot during this campaign. And when you think about what happened, certainly a lot of voting action happened on the East Coast, but a lot of it, you know, happened in the middle of the country, sort of flyover country, where it may be that reporters are not based so often. And if they are based there, maybe they fly in, they visit, they talk to a few people, and then they fly out again. I mean, do you think that we need to be more regional in the way that we cover the country to really have a sense of what's going on?
Yeah, well, I am one of those national reporters who parachute in and then leave. But it's taken me, you know, to places like Wisconsin many times and all over the country. And I think that I draw my perspective as a national reporter from traveling all around. I don't spend a lot of my time in Washington, in the Beltway. I'm always out there trying to talk to people and understand where they're coming from. Now, the people in the heartland don't have a monopoly on real America. People in Washington and New York City are also real Americans. I was a local reporter in the Southwest, which is a region that also often gets ignored by the coastal media. I was a local reporter in Las Vegas for 5.5 years, and that really developed my perspective in being on the ground, understanding a local population that was not part of the coasts. And so that's another place that I have returned to as a national reporter and that contributes to my understanding. So I would say absolutely journalists need to get out of the cities and get out of the corridors of power. But the people who do that more than anyone are campaign reporters. Campaign reporters spend the great proportion of their time traveling around America and trying to listen to and to understand the people who really drive American politics, and that's the voters.
So what's next for the media? I know that's a big thing to say because the media is not a monolith. There's all different approaches to the media, but all kinds of questions being raised right now about where the media goes next, how it should best cover Donald Trump. There is this precedent of this contentious relationship already going forward and some norms that we've come to expect from the way the press pool covers the president have already seemed to be eroding or at least changing a little bit. So what do you think the media should do to best cover this presidency?
Well, fortunately for me and probably for America, I do not run the media. So I can really only speak to how I plan to approach the story. But it as I said before, it's a big story, an unprecedented story, a story that a lot of people are looking to us for answers, and so we just have to keep covering it as best we can, trying to find out what's true and trying to tell people what the truth is. And that means not, you know, the journalism slogan, without fear or favor, that means that we cannot be intimidated by attacks from a candidate or his or her supporters. And we've got to continue to serve our audience. You know, when Donald Trump has declared war on the media, and I think the last thing we should do is engage in that fight, declare war back, because that's basically taking the bait. He wants to be in a fight with us, but we are not fighting. We're not a self-interested. He sees us as a self-interested lobbying group for our own interests versus his. Our interests are our readers' interests. We have to serve our readers and serve the public and keep our focus on finding the truth and giving it to people, not on advocacy for the interests of the media.
Molly, we leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Great conversation.
That was Molly Ball. She's a national political reporter for The Atlantic, and she's currently the December Writer-in-Residence at UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics.